Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. In the introduction to her new book, Abortion, Our Bodies, Their Lies, and the Truths We Use to Win, today's guest, Jessica Valenti, writes, quote, "I'll be honest, I resent having to write this book. I am livid that of all the things I could be doing right now, I am defending my humanity. It feels, as a friend of mine once put it, humiliating. Women should not have to convince the world that we are full people worthy of rights, protections, and the ability to control our own bodies. Yet, here we are." Jessica Valenti's new book comes out 2 years after the fall of Roe. That is when she started Abortion Every Day, a newsletter about everything happening with abortion rights in the U.S. She started the newsletter because, quote, "The lawmakers and activists forcing us into pregnancy and childbirth are launching a full-scale assault on our rights and freedom that they had 50 years to plan for. They know what they're doing, and they're depending on us not to catch it," end quote. Well, once the Roe dust settled, she initially thought she wouldn't have enough news to write about daily, but that never happened. She writes that it became clear, and it still is, that the overwhelm is very much the point. Jessica Valenti attended her first pro-choice march with her mom 32 years ago when she was an eighth grader. She started writing about feminism 20 years ago. She now has a 13-year-old daughter who, as she says, and I had to read this twice, is young enough to sleep with a teddy bear, but old enough to be forced to carry a pregnancy against her will. Jessica Valenti is the author of 7 books, including the groundbreaking anthology Yes Means Yes, Visions of Female Sexual Power and a World Without Rape, which paved the way for legislation of the same name, setting what is now considered the gold standard for sexual consent. In 2004, she founded the trailblazing blog Feministing. Her new book is called Abortion, Our Bodies, Their Lies, and the Truths We Use to Win. Hi, Jessica. Thank you so much for all of your important work over the years, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Well, it is so easy to forget that the overwhelming majority support abortion, given that for years we have heard over and over again that abortion is the most divisive issue of our time. You write, "Forcing someone to be pregnant when they don't want to be is dangerous and cruel, and voters know it. Over 80% of Americans do not want the government making decisions about pregnancy at all." So can you talk about this and how support for abortion has actually increased since the overturning of Roe?
Sure. It is one of the biggest myths, I think, about abortion rights, that America is polarized on the issue. Literally for decades, the majority of Americans have wanted abortion to be legal, but since Roe was overturned, that support has really grown exponentially. And that stat that you just read is one that I repeat often, because I think it really does shock people to find out that so many Americans, 81%, do not want the government involved in abortion or pregnancy in any way. They do not want this regulated by the law. You would never think that if you were to just, you know, read newspaper headlines or the way that politicians talk about this issue. This is an issue where we're talking about a small extremist group of legislators imposing their will on the vast majority of voters. And I really want to make sure that we're talking about the issue in that way.
I think this has to be one of the major failures of the media in the past couple of decades. You write, "One reason the myth of a divided America persists is a media problem, specifically the obsession with both sides' journalism. If you were to learn about abortion only by reading a mainstream newspaper or magazine, you might get the impression that Americans are evenly split over the issue." You have so many examples of this in your book, Jessica. God, what explains this, and what do you think has changed since the overturning of Roe?
I do think it's a lot of fear. I think a lot of journalists at mainstream outlets have this fear of being called biased, and the anti-abortion movement is really good at attacking them with that accusation. And so I think they take a lot of care to sort of have both sides, give them equal space, give equal column inches, even when one side is not representing even, you know, a small minority of Americans, and when one side is not telling the truth, doesn't have science behind them. And so it's been really, really frustrating to watch. I will say, since Roe was overturned, the coverage has gotten a lot better, but we're still not quite there yet. I think in part it's because there weren't a ton of abortion rights reporters. There are not a lot of people in media who have a tremendous amount of history with this issue, who know the details, the context, the history. And so we're seeing a lot of sort of generalist political reporters, general health reporters take this on. And they're great. But if you don't know that history, if you don't know that context, and most importantly, I think these days, if you don't understand the language of the anti-abortion movement, mm-hmm. it's really easy to mischaracterize or misreport. And that's something I've been sort of obsessed with lately, with Vance and Trump talking about a national abortion ban and the way that's being covered.
Right. And also, you have been tweeting a lot and writing about Trump's obsession spreading the lie that abortions are happening after birth, that children are being killed. And he just keeps saying this.
Yeah, he just keeps repeating it. And what is really interesting to me is that I think a lot of people assume this is sort of Trump being Trump, just repeating another outrageous lie in the way that we're sort of accustomed to him doing. But the truth is that is a talking point that was fed to him by the country's most powerful anti-abortion organization. You know, they're using him as a mouthpiece. And so this is actually a pretty well planned out attack that, of course, is completely false, completely ridiculous, demonstrably untrue. But it's so distressing to watch it happen in real time.
And did that come from the Susan B. Anthony pro-life group?
Yes.
Okay.
It did. It came from Susan B. Anthony Pro-Life America. And they've been pushing this for a really long time because they think that this is the one way that they're going to be able to sway voters, because they know that voters really, really disagree with abortion bans, really oppose them.
And they gave J.D. Vance an A+ on their scorecard.
Yes, they sure did. J.D. Vance, you could not find a more anti-abortion guy if you tried. You know, this is someone who said abortion was the issue that got him interested in politics to begin with, right? And so it's sort of fascinating to see him in the debate and in recent weeks sort of try to feign moderation and try to pretend as if he has somehow softened on this issue when we know that that's not true. You know, he supports a national abortion ban, no exceptions for rape and incest. He has been, you know, quoted as talking about maybe we need federal legislation so that women don't leave their states to get out of state abortion care. Really, really extremist views.
You also write in your book about the strategy behind constantly talking about so-called partial birth abortions and late-term abortions. So this is another thing that Republicans are doing to try to change the conversation, to accuse Democrats and people who support abortion of just casually saying, oh yes, anyone can have an abortion at 7, 8, or 9 months. And we're hearing so much more of this. Can you talk about why they're focusing so much of their time on that?
I think that it's really the only thing that they have. It's the only talking point, the only message that they have that shows a little bit of movement with voters. There are, unfortunately, some voters that believe this. And I think it also taps into American misogyny in this really particular way, right? Where this idea that a woman would sort of wait until she was 8 or 9 months pregnant and just decide to get an abortion. There's something really deeply misogynist and sexist about that idea. And that's why in the book and in my newsletter, I'm often calling on Democrats to really take that talking point head on and to say to Republicans, what woman do you know would do this? What woman are you talking about? And I think it's really important that we're talking about abortions later in pregnancy. And it actually is sort of a winning message for Democrats, despite beliefs to the contrary, because when you look at all of these horror stories that have come out since Roe was overturned, when you look at the people who are going septic, who are being denied care, the vast majority of those people who have gone public have been folks who needed abortions later in their pregnancies, right? And so when Republicans say, oh, someone wants an abortion at such and such month, who were you talking about? Are you talking about Amanda Zarowski? Are you talking about these women whose stories have touched Americans? Because that is who they're talking about.
Today, we're speaking with Jessica Valenti, who started the newsletter Abortion Every Day right after Roe was overturned. And she's now out with a new book, Abortion, Our Bodies, Their Lies, and the Truths We Use to Win. Jessica will be with us for about 15 more minutes. So if you have any questions or comments, now would be a good time to call 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. So when Republicans repeat these lies enough, the media tend to use the same language. You tweeted about this on the night of the vice presidential debate. So let's hear how that language got into a question. Here is CBS anchor and moderator Nora O'Donnell.
Governor Walz, after Roe versus Wade was overturned, you signed a bill into law that made Minnesota one of the least restrictive states in the nation when it comes to abortion. Former President Trump said in the last debate that you believe abortion, quote, in the ninth month is absolutely fine. Yes or no? Is that what you support? I'll give you 2 minutes.
That's not what the bill says, but look, this issue is what's on everyone's mind. Donald Trump put this all into motion. He brags about how great it was that he put the judges in and overturned Roe versus Wade, 52 years of personal autonomy. And then he tells us, oh, we send it to the states. It's a beautiful thing. Amanda Zaworski would disagree with you on it's a beautiful thing. A young bride in Texas waiting for their child at 18 weeks, she has a complication, a tear in the membrane. She needs to go in. The medical care at that point needs to be decided by the doctor. And that would have been an abortion. But in Texas, that would have put them in legal jeopardy. She went home, got sepsis, nearly dies, and now she may have difficulty having children. Or in Kentucky, Hadley Duvall, a 12-year-old child raped and impregnated by her stepfather. Those are horrific. Now, when got asked about that, Senator Vance said, two wrongs don't make a right. There is no right in this. So in Minnesota, what we did was restore Roe versus Wade. We made sure that we put women in charge of their health care. But look, this is not where, if you don't know Amanda or a Hadley, you soon will. Their Project 2025 is going to have a registry of pregnancies. It's going to make it more difficult, if not impossible, to get contraception and limit access, if not eliminate access to infertility treatments. For so many of you out there listening, me included, infertility treatments are why I have a child. That's nobody else's business, but those things are being proposed. And the catch-all on this is, well, the states will decide. What's right for Texas might not be right for Washington. That's not how this works. This is basic human right. We have seen maternal mortality skyrocket in Texas, outpacing many other countries in the world. This is about healthcare. In Minnesota, we are ranked first in healthcare for a reason. We trust women. We trust doctors.
So there's Vice Presidential candidate Tim Walz answering a question from Nora O'Donnell, CBS anchor and moderator. The question was framed based on Donald Trump's lies about having abortions in the ninth month. Jessica, can you talk about this and how this does seep into these questions? And then it causes people to question, well, why would anyone do that?
Right. I think this is honestly one of the best recent examples of that danger of both sides media and this feeling that mainstream outlets need to, I'm sure that they thought that they were appearing objective. There is not a crisis in women getting later abortion care. There is a crisis in women being denied abortions, women going septic. There is a crisis in terms of attacks on democracy, attacks on our bodies. And so to frame the question in this way, it almost felt offensive to me, honestly, because that is not what candidates need to be talking about. At last research that Minnesota put out about abortions, there were two women who had abortions after 25 weeks. Are we to believe that those two women are more dangerous than a vice presidential candidate who wants to stop women from leaving their state to get abortion care? It just, it puts these things on equal footing when they are not even close.
You also tweeted that when Tim Walz talked about Project 2025, calling for registering pregnancies. A couple of media outlets, including CNN, said that's false. But you point out that that is exactly what it calls for. The CDC would be housed under the, quote, Department of Life, and it would create a national abortion database and adopt a surveillance system that all states would be required to report to.
Yeah, it would require, and it would require states report abortions, stillbirths, miscarriages, fetal death that was caused by medical treatment like chemotherapy, right? So that is very, very much pregnancy surveillance, which is a huge part of the anti-abortion movement's strategy moving forward. And this is something I write about quite a lot in the book. They are depending on sort of fabricating numbers, on mischaracterizing data to trick Americans into thinking that these bans aren't really hurting people when we know that they are. And we know, in fact, of course, that they're killing people.
You write that conservatives are not even using the word ban anymore because of all of the outrage that has happened.
That has been one of the most interesting trends that I've tracked since Roe was overturned. They know that abortion bans are so incredibly unpopular with Americans that they will not use the word. And that's why you'll hear someone like Vance say national minimum standard instead. But what most people don't understand is that that is the same thing. When they say national minimum standard, that just means national abortion ban. And it's been a very, very clever way to trick not just voters, but the media as well. And the way they've sort of done that is by redefining ban. The anti-abortion movement says an abortion ban only refers to a total prohibition on abortion without exceptions, even for women's lives. And so under their definition, there are no abortion bans in America. And so when Donald Trump says he would veto a national abortion ban, what he's really saying is that he would veto a law that was a total prohibition on abortion without exceptions for women's lives. If someone was to ask him, would you veto a minimum national standard, a minimum restriction, they would have a very different answer. And what they mean by minimum national standard is what the rest of the country understands as an abortion ban. They mean a 6-week, 12-week, 15-week ban. And so it's really, really insidious that they are using language in this way and that so many people haven't caught on to what that trick really is.
This is really important because you posted a screenshot on your Twitter page, Politico, The Wall Street Journal, CNN, CBS News, all saying Trump says he would veto a federal abortion ban. And you're arguing this guy might sign a 6-week ban, which is the same exact thing.
And then they'll call it a national minimum restriction,
right?
They'll say, well, it's not an abortion ban because it has exceptions. Frustrating to have been tracking this for so long, to have been writing about it for so long and really trying to alert as many journalists as possible, and to still see political reporters making this mistake over and over again. They're really doing a disservice to Americans when they do this. And I really do think that if Trump wins this election, it will be in large part because of the way that the media did not hold him to account on his abortion issues.
You know, why do you think, Jessica, that 80% of the population supports abortion rights? And when this issue is taken to the voters, abortion rights almost always wins, like, let's say 95% of the time. And yet these same people vote for these Republicans who are passing these bans. How do you explain that?
It's really, really difficult to watch, I will say. I think the latest poll that came out that sort of looked at this phenomenon, it showed that the women specifically who were planning on voting for Trump, for example, even though they also planned to vote for a pro-choice ballot measure, they had bought into his lie that this was going to be up to the will of the people, that he had very generously given abortion back to the states, and now voters could decide for themselves. Now, what they don't talk about, what Republicans don't talk about when they use this language about the will of the people, is the fact that in every single state where abortion is on the ballot measure, where activists have tried to put it on the ballot measure, Republicans are trying to keep it off, trying to stop voters from having a say. They're removing voters from rolls. They are, writing biased ballot summaries. They're doing anything that they can to make sure that voters will not have a direct say on abortion rights, because as you said, when voters do have a direct say, abortion rights wins.
The stories you tell in your newsletter and then in your new book, Abortion, are just so tragic. And in the introduction, I have to say, I had to read this line twice. When you wrote about your 13-year-old daughter who is young enough to sleep with a teddy bear, but old enough to be forced to carry a pregnancy against her will, you write about what is really happening here, because a theme that's been coming up on the show a lot, especially when we talk about Project 2025, is that, oh, that could never happen here. Yeah. But it is happening here. And you write, it is not an exaggeration to say that the people who create these laws want us dead. They know what their policies have done and will do. And Jessica, I still have a hard time wrapping my head around that.
I know. It's really difficult because it's really scary. And I think that's part of the problem. But if we don't face up to how bad this is now, it's going to get even worse. You know, feminists warned for years that Roe was going to be overturned, and we were called hysterical for it. And then it happened. And that's why I'm spending so much time now with the book, with the newsletter, talking about attacks on birth control, which are already happening, talking about attacks on our right to travel, which are already happening. And I'm also trying to, I think, channel a lot of the anger that I think a lot of American women in particular are feeling about this, because you do feel, gaslit is an overused word, but it's correct in this case. You do feel gaslit by all of this. They are literally forcing children to give birth. You're talking about cancer patients being denied radiation and treatment. It's so outrageous, but that Overton window has really shifted. And all of a sudden, this is being talked about as if it's normal, and it's not normal. And that, to me, was the most important thing that I could do with the book, is to just reiterate again and again that we cannot let women's suffering become normalized.
And I wonder how you're able to keep this up every day, because I signed up for your newsletter as soon as you started it. And I have to say, it's hard to read. Sometimes I just can't read it day after day. There's so much in there. And you just say, how is this possibility of charging women with murder, women already being jailed? I mean, how do you keep this up day after day?
You know, I just do. I think it's what the moment requires. The attacks really are so unrelenting, and there is so much every single day, that I just want to be able to provide a little bit of order to that chaos. And just on a personal level, I think it makes me feel like I have a handle on things, right? It makes me feel a little bit better, like at least they're not going to get away with anything, because I can see exactly what they're up to, and I can see years ahead into their plan. And that makes me feel like I know what to do moving forward, and I know what kind of action to take.
Well, thank you for that really incredible work. Final thoughts, Jessica. You write about where Democrats have gone wrong, where pro-choice organizations have gone wrong. What are your thoughts on the way forward at this point?
I think it's just about wholeheartedly embracing abortion rights, because most Americans do, because it is the morally correct thing to do. I think it's time that we stop being apologetic, stop being on the defensive. Abortion has always been a proactive moral good, and it's really time that we start talking about it that way.
Jessica Valenti is the author of the new book, Abortion: Our Bodies, Their Lies, and the Truths We Use to Win. This book comes out 2 years after the fall of Roe, and that is when she started Abortion Every Day, a newsletter about everything happening with abortion rights in the United States. And you can sign up for her newsletter at kalw.org, click news, and then your call. Jessica, huge thanks and respect for all of your work, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you. Coming up after a break, we will talk about Zurofsky v. Texas, a new documentary that exposes the devastation of abortion bans in Republican-controlled states. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this.